No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/hailmary. That's hims.com/hailmary for your free online visit. hims.com/hailmary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hear that? Is that America cheering? Or a sausage patty sizzling to perfection? It's time to cheer for Egg McMuffin and fresh cracked eggs at McDonald's. It's time to wake up to the aroma of freshly baked biscuits and treat yourself to a real honest-to-goodness morning meal. Breakfast, it's on at McDonald's. Now enjoy a large iced coffee for just $2. Add a breakfast sandwich to make a meal. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Help Jews in Poverty at helpjewsnow.org. Your $25 gift today will help provide a life-saving food box to Jews in need. Be a blessing right now. Visit helpjewsnow.org. That's helpjewsnow.org.
Dispensing cannabis business knowledge beyond a million square feet of cultivation space, CannabisRadio.com proudly presents Blunt Business, harvested by Strainwise Consulting. Together, we will navigate the challenges and opportunities of one of the most profitable industries on earth. Join us each episode to hear our weekly roundtables and interviews with industry professionals. Now, let's delve into some Blunt Business with your host, Sean Eubanks.
Thanks for joining us and welcome to Blunt Business Radio. I'm your host, Sean Eubanks, Vice President of Strainwise Consulting. And on our show today, we have Jay Kotzker, General Counsel of Strainwise Consulting. The founders of Strainwise were among the early pioneers involved in the marijuana industry in the state of Colorado. They have branded and supported 9 medical and recreational marijuana dispensaries and approximately 290,000 square feet of sophisticated and efficient product cultivation. Strainwise has been involved in submitting over 190 applications in various states, with a success rate of over 95%. So Jay is experienced in all areas of intellectual property and cannabis law, including brand development and protection. He guides clients through cannabis business licensing, compliance, and operational issues. He has an LLM, an international property law from George Washington University in D.C. With respect to cannabis compliance, Jay has been an active participant in various state and local stakeholder working groups, which are vital to the drafting and revising of state and local laws affecting cannabis businesses. Jay is an expert advisor for supported businesses on legal developments and regulations affecting production, transportation, microbial potency, and pesticide testing, and compliant handling and sale of cannabis and cannabis products. He's drafted numerous standard operating procedures affecting pesticide use, green waste, and legal compliance, touching all areas of compliant cannabis operations. When Jay's not in the office, he enjoys spending time with his wife, 3 children, coaching soccer, mentoring high schoolers, and enjoying all the outdoor activities in Colorado. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I know you're a busy guy, so I really, really appreciate you coming on. So what are we going to learn today?
Well, there's a number of things we're going to learn, but as an attorney, first, there's a little legal disclaimer that I've got to get out of the way. I hope you don't mind too much. Generally, the material provided in our interview and our talk today is for informational purposes only, not for the purpose of providing legal advice. This presentation and anything that any of the listeners use with it is not provided in the course and does not create or constitute an attorney-client relationship. It's not intended to convey or constitute legal advice, and it's not a substitute for obtaining legal advice from a qualified attorney. Obviously, we're talking about a very lucrative and high risk and complex area of the law. And I would suggest that anyone looking to protect their brands or enforce their brands in this business or any other business for that matter would seek a qualified professional counsel on your specific issues. But to get back to your question, Sean, what are we gonna learn today? We're gonna learn about intellectual property. It's a passion of mine. It's where my focus in the legal field has been for 10 years now. And the interplay into the cannabis space has really been fascinating and very intriguing to me. So what were we going to cover? We're going to cover all types of intellectual property. What different types of intellectual property are there? How do you use the different types? When can they be employed for what specific uses? How you would enforce those rights? And we'll talk about some interesting case studies involving strain-wise and trademarks and copyrights in general as it relates to cannabis law.
Okay, and so we'll discuss protection for new cannabis varieties, maybe protection for growing methods as well?
That's right. So we'll discuss generally some patents. There's a couple different types of patents, utility patents, plant patents, design patents. We'll discuss trade secrets, trademarks, which is big in this industry right now. That obviously encompasses the big branding component that everybody is focusing on as expansion across the country progresses. And we'll also talk generally about copyrights as well.
Great. So in regards to patents, getting started here, what's a utility patent and plant patent and design patent, and why is that important for us to know?
Right. First, I think it's important to understand that patents protect inventions. Okay. When we're talking about intellectual property law, we're talking about generally, just inventions of the mind. Okay. So whether it's in the case of patents, we're talking about utility, plant, and design patents. So utility patent protects most types of traditional inventions. Think of a new type of a light bulb, a chemical compound, a new process, maybe for extracting a compound from a plant, which is very relevant here. With plant patents, we use them to protect new varieties of asexually vegetatively produced plants. Think, for example, a new rose bush or a fruit tree. One of my personal favorites created by the University of Minnesota is the Honeycrisp apple. That's protected by a plant patent. And then we've got design patents, which are used to protect new non-functional designs of tangible items, like a particular shape of a pair of sunglasses. That variety of patent is not as relevant to the cannabis space, but we will touch a little bit on it.
And so is there a difference between a hemp plant and a marijuana plant when it comes to patents?
There absolutely could be, depending on whether we're looking and talking about a utility patent for a new cannabis strain, or we're talking about a plant patent for a new cannabis strain. For example, a utility patent covers a cannabis plant containing a particular, perhaps a cannabinoid and terpene oil profile, something that hasn't been obvious in the industry or hasn't been created in the industry before. With a plant patent, we're talking about an asexually produced plant that maybe is a new cross, a new strain, a new genetic profile of the plant itself.
Okay, and so we've talked a little bit about protection for new cannabis varieties, protection for new growing methods, other types of protection that might be available. Let's dive into utility plant patent and design patent and how those are different and relevant.
Sure. Let's talk a little bit about the plant patent first. For example, there's a recent one that was issued on December 20th, 2016, patent number 27475, which is a really boring sounding plant patent name, but it's for a cannabis plant named Ecuadorian sativa. It was a cross-pollination of a couple different varieties, Celestial Temple sativa and an island sweet skunk. It gave an F1 generation named Pleiadian that was hermaphroditic, which is what you're looking for. It's an asexually produced plant. There was one female plant found in this crop that was asexually produced but through cuttings, and then that was used to make this Ecuadorian sativa strain. This strain was novel and not known in the industry. It had a very low CBG cannabinoid profile, but high limonene and a low micrine profile. So, there's a real focus in the industry on terpene profiles and really messing with the cannabinoid profiles of specific plants to treat specific maladies. And I think what you're going to see is a revolution in these plant patents for these types of new strains in plants.
So do you see it being medically driven in the way that, okay, it addresses these symptoms and now it's available for a patent? Or do you see it as kind of like the Ecuadorian where it's rare anyway versus like a Blue Dream or a more well-known strain that's going to be harder to get a patent? Or is that the truth?
Well, I think what you'll see is a little bit of both. I think you'll see the scientific and medical community really digging in and focusing on a plant patent that has a specific profile for a target patient base. For example, maybe you have people that have Crohn's disease that would really benefit from a certain cannabinoid profile and perhaps even a terpene profile in different mixtures. And so through that research and development, they may be able to come up with a plant patent that treats that specifically. What I think you'll also see from a more, a more consumer-based, recreational-based, industry-leaning is that you'll see people coming up with new strains of patents, new strains of plants, rather, that, have maybe a new high THC profile with a very interesting terpene profile. So you're going to have, connoisseurs that would want this plant variety for its specific taste and its specific cannabinoid profile, irrespective of the medicinal benefits that it may have. So I think you'll see a little bit of both.
Okay, and is this patent a federal patent that they got, or is it just for the state?
So you can only get a patent on the federal level. Patent rights are not conferred on the state level, so everything that we're talking about today is conferred through the Patent and Trademark Office in Washington, D.C.
Okay, and so walk me through this. So I'm growing Blue Dream inside Colorado. It is the most popular strain in Colorado. The way we grow it is better, in my opinion. So I want to go ahead and patent that. Is that possible, or is it just too well known, too generic? I mean, what are my challenges there?
So it's interesting because the legal standard for a patent is that it has to be new, novel, and non-obvious. Those all are terms of art used in the legal industry for intellectual property, and they all have specific meanings. But if you had something that was already generally known to the public that had been on sale, to the public or disseminated to the public, it's not likely that you'd be able to secure patent rights for that. I'll go back and give a little bit more information too. The patent itself doesn't give you the right to do anything. It gives you the right to exclude others from making it or using it or selling it without your permission. The process itself takes, 1 to 2 years to get your patent and can range anywhere from $3,000 to $6,000 plus dollars. And then generally a utility and a plant patent will last 20 years from the date of filing. So you have an incentive to invest, R&D dollars into developing these new plant strains, in that if you came up with something that met the new novel and non-obvious standard, you'd be able to exclude others from producing that. Obviously, it's difficult to prove, for example, that, a grower in Oregon is perhaps, infringing on a patent that you have and created that you've been growing and selling in Colorado. You'd have to get down into some very in-depth DNA testing of the plant itself.
Okay, we discussed a little bit about patents. What is intellectual property? Kind of an overview of that as we dive into the subsets here. I thought we skipped that.
So intellectual property is just protects creations of the mind. We've been talking about patents, and those are inventions. We talk about literary and artistic works. Those are copyrights. We're talking about designs and symbols and names and images used in commerce. Those are trademarks. What's important to remember is intellectual property is an intangible asset, but oftentimes it's the most valuable asset a company owns. A prime example of that is Coca-Cola. The brand name itself is worldwide famous, right? The logos, the script writing that Coca-Cola is written in is famous in itself. And then the trade secret formula itself, which has been held secret in confidence by the company for over 100 years, all of those assets combined together make up the most value of the Coca-Cola company. If they didn't have protection on those various pieces of their IP portfolio, they would not be as successful as they are today.
Okay, and so going on to patents now, we've We file an application phone with where you there. But what the patent give, we know it excludes others, but what does it give you, and how long does a patent last?
Right. And we touched on this just a couple seconds ago. It gives you the right to exclude others from making it or using it or selling it without your permission, which your permission usually comes in the way of a royalty or a licensing agreement of some sort. And like we said, the utility and plant patents, which is most relevant here, they last 20 years from the date of filing. As far as how you go about securing one, we talked about a little bit that they're granted by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. In order to obtain those rights, you have to file an application and demonstrate that the invention is useful and novel and not obvious over what was already known in the industry. For plant patents, this standard is easy to meet unless you sold the variety, you know, more than 1 year before you file your patent application.
Excellent. Well, we need to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll be rejoined by Jay Kosker, General Counsel of Strainwise Consulting. During the break, check out their website, www.strainwiseconsulting.com. We're going to talk about why you need to focus on IP in the cannabis industry, as well as cannabis patents and trade secrets when we come back.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business. Are you disturbed by the prescription medication commercials on television and their endless list of side effects? They go on, and you end up having to take multiple pills to counteract the problems caused by the first pill. It never ends. Have you looked into CBD as a more natural option? At Saturn Ranch, we produce all-natural CBD topicals and THC-infused edibles. Premium lab-tested hemp-derived CBD is the most important ingredient in our products. From topical balms, salt scrubs, bath-soaking salts to tinctures and edibles, you're sure to find something to help. Family-owned and operated, we at Saturn Ranch believe in and use our products daily. Don't put anything on your body that you wouldn't put in your body. SaturnRanch.com.
The cannabis world of tomorrow converges for the first ever Southeast Cannabis Conference and Expo in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, June 9th through the 11th. Register right now at seccexpo.com. TV talk icon Montel Williams, NFL All-Stars Ricky Williams, Marvin Washington, and Kyle Turley lead some of our top-tier panels in industry information, athletics, real estate, technology, medical research, and more. Meet hundreds of vendors and thousands of entrepreneurs at the 2017 Southeast Cannabis Conference and Expo in Fort Lauderdale. Last-minute registration is open now at seccexpo.com.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Vuber vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Vuber vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be, the Vuber way.
I hope you didn't forget about us, because we're back with Blunt Business on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back to Blunt Business. I'm your host, Sean Eubanks, and we've been talking to Jay Kosker, General Counsel of Strainwise Consulting. So let's dive into trade secrets next, Jay.
Sure. And this is also a very important component of an overall IP portfolio. As we mentioned before the break, Coca-Cola is one of their primary IP components is their trade secret on their secret recipe so that nobody else can create the Coca-Cola product that tastes exactly the same way. Trade secrets in general, they protect confidential business information. This business information provides a company with a sort of competitive advantage. In addition to the recipe for Coca-Cola, let's think about KFC's secret recipe, right? Mm-hmm. These types of things are a little bit different than traditional intellectual property, such as trademarks and copyrights and patents, in that there's no filing that's necessarily required. What they're used to protect are business information, pricing information, suppliers, customer lists, processes you would perhaps use in a cultivation facility, any new methods that a company would develop, which will not become publicly disclosed, perhaps a new mixture of nutrients to obtain that elusive 3 pounds per plant,
Excellent. So along cultivation and improved methods, that seems like it'd be very difficult to prove. I mean, what if I'm using an irrigation system that's different, or I mean, how do you see that as a challenge to actually prove that what you're doing is worthy of a patent, or it's an actual trade secret?
Sure. I mean, one of the components of how to protect a trade secret is you just have to protect it from public disclosure. You have to make sure your employees are aware that you view something as a trade secret. You would have a confidentiality, a non-disclosure agreement in place, perhaps, that all of your employees or cultivation staff, as the case may be, would sign, indicating that, look, the process that we're using in this cultivation facility, we view it as proprietary. We don't want it to get out to the public. And therefore, you're going to take a specific number of steps in-house to protect that information from being disseminated.
Okay, so very intelligent to have all of your employees on a non-disclosure agreement at the grow, correct?
Absolutely. Not only at the grow, but I would say company-wide. You know, this is an industry where people are learning new things every single day. You know, the research and development, the advancement in technologies in this, you know, industry-wide is growing at an exponential rate. Having your employees understand that, hey, what we're developing and curating in-house here is very important to our competitive advantage is vital.
Do you know an example of, or something that we've dealt with at Strainwise where we had an employee leave and go and take some IP or some trade secrets that way?
You know, we don't have any specific examples of that, but we can, you know, we can show that that there have been employees that have left and certain cultivation techniques or things that we have been using, you know, in some of our supported cultivation facilities have all of a sudden popped up in other cultivation facilities. Now, whether that was through disclosure of trade secrets or that was mere coincidence, I don't think we're able to tell that definitively.
Yeah, because even though a trade secret does give you confidentiality, there's nothing that can stop your competitors from independently developing the same processes, right?
That's right. And, it, you know, and again, ultimately, you'd have to prove that they obtained your trade secret through some unlawful disclosure of an employee, a contractor, or someone that was in your facility, which is difficult to do, but not unheard of.
Okay, and how long does a trade secret last?
You know, the great thing about trade secrets, Sean, is they last as long as they don't become publicly known. As I mentioned before, the Coca-Cola recipe has been maintained as a trade secret for over 100 years. They have taken very, very robust steps to protect that. I've heard that the actual recipe is locked in a safe somewhere near their headquarters in Atlanta, Georgia, and literally only a handful of people company-wide have ever had access to that. People in the production facilities that are actually making the Coca-Cola only know a small component, so they couldn't go out and make Coca-Cola themselves.
And so Coca-Cola is a famous example of obviously secret sauce. I guess KFC could be another one. These are foods. Is there anything on the agricultural side or that's cannabis specific that you can think of that could be a legitimate trade secret?
Sure. I think anytime that you have a proven cultivation method, a proven you know, nutrient feeding schedule, a proven mixing of various nutrients to produce the biggest flowers or the healthiest plants you can, all of that is considered trade secrets, and provided it's not known outside of your company, is protectable.
Okay, and let's move on to trademarks now as it relates to branding, because we talk a lot about branding on this show and in general with our clients. So let's kind of dive into trademarks for branding.
Sure. So a trademark is a word or a phrase or a symbol or a design or a combination of any of those. And what it does, it identifies and distinguishes the source of the goods or services from one party from those of another. For example, the mark Strainwise is a registered trademark. The hexagon logo that Strainwise has is also a protected trademark. And what that's conveying is a source of services, consulting services, branding services, you know, facility design and build out services that our company provides that are distinguished from other people's services that may be similar.
And so we've had to enforce our trademark in a couple of different ways. Talk about, I know we dealt with the NFL a little bit, but there was another company where we were dealing with here in Colorado. Can you talk about that?
Sure. Without getting into the company name or the specifics of it, I can say that, you know, we've got an educational campaign called Consume Intelligently that is protected by federal trademark. It's been widely disseminated around the state. In other states, it's actually been adopted by local jurisdictions as part of their public education campaigns. And we've seen others in the industry using things very similar. We've seen people use, for example, consume responsibly. And we view that as not necessarily nefarious out of the gates. I mean, we'd like to think that people in the industry are generally supportive of one another and want to encourage growth across the industry. But part of your trademark rights do require you to police your trademark and enforce it when you see that someone's using something confusingly similar. In this case, we sent a cease and desist letter, worked it out with the other party, and everybody's happy.
So they were agreeable to that?
Absolutely.
Okay, and now talking about the NFL, we did an ad one time. We were trying to – you ever see that thing where I was in Pittsburgh a couple weeks ago, and it was if so-and-so hit a home run during this inning, you get a free burrito from a famous taco place. Seemed pretty legit, but it made me think about it in a different way, having heard your story you're going to share with us. Talk about the NFL and how we got sideways with them.
Sure, yeah. Early on in the company's existence, we had been promoting the dispensary services of one of our supported clients. Part of that included a promotion where if the Broncos won, then there were certain deals, you know, the following morning, on a Monday morning or a Tuesday morning if they had played Monday Night Football. We had crafted these advertisements using the Broncos' name, not any of their trademarks, and we had also done the advertisement in the familiar blue and orange of the Broncos. The NFL and the NFL offices back in New York did not take kindly to that. They sent us a nice letter indicating that they believed that we were using the Broncos and using the NFL's intellectual property to somehow promote our company, to advise the consuming public that there was an affiliation between the Broncos and our dispensaries, and to otherwise playing off the goodwill that the Broncos and the NFL had developed in that brand.
Yeah, and in that situation, we might disagree with them, but the idea is just to play nice and get along.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, you don't want to go fighting the NFL. It's certainly not a legal battle that we wanted to get into. In the end of the day, we agreed to remove any sort of references to the Broncos or the NFL, and then we modified the color scheme slightly so that it wasn't exactly the same orange and blue as the Broncos use. And then we, you know, modified the advertisement to read, "Hey, when the local team wins, you win."
And so how do you get a trademark?
So, Sean, trademarks exist at both the state and the federal level. With respect to the state trademarks, you have to be using the mark commercially in the state to obtain trademark rights. You identify that by using the superscript TM. You don't actually get a registration certificate from a specific state. The state registration system is really more of like a notice system to other people where you're claiming trademark rights and they would be able to go and search a trademark database in that specific state to find out whether there was something confusingly similar out there. Many states have the state trademark registration system. Specifically, they'll take cannabis trademarks, Colorado, Washington being prime examples. Now that's a little bit different than on the federal level. The federal level, you have to register your mark with the Patent and Trademark Office. And the rights are a little bit different as well. A federal registration gives you the right to use the mark nationwide. It gives you the right to challenge infringers of the mark in federal court, and the ability to make your mark incontestable, meaning your exclusive right to the mark cannot be challenged. Incontestability is a little bit of a trickier issue. We won't get into it too much here today. But it's really reserved for people that have been using marks on a national level for a number of years.
Okay, and then you don't recommend people go on this at their own pace and try to do it on your own. You obviously need an attorney for this, but if someone was going to try to forge through this, I mean, if they made a mistake on a TM when it was really a copyright or something like that, do you get guidance from the state or at the federal level to help you, or they just kind of say, look, you filed it wrong, it doesn't count?
On the federal level, you would actually want to submit a specimen, which is, an advertising piece. Maybe it's a website, maybe it's a brochure, maybe it's a promotional banner or some sort, showing how the trademark is being used commercially. That's the big kicker with trademark law is the mark has to be used commercially. The patent and trademark has made it very clear that they're not going to be a warehouse for just storing people's trademarks that they hope to use one day. So you have to be using it commercially, and they want to see that you're actually using it commercially.
Hear that? Is that America cheering or a sausage patty sizzling to perfection? It's time to cheer for Egg McMuffin and fresh cracked eggs at McDonald's. It's time to wake up to the aroma of freshly baked biscuits and treat yourself to a real honest-to-goodness morning meal. Breakfast, it's on at McDonald's. Now enjoy a large iced coffee for just $2. Add a breakfast sandwich to make a meal. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Okay, and then
to use or register the mark. Through the federal application process, you have to advise the Patent and Trademark Office the date that you first used the mark anywhere. Maybe that was an internal discussion. Maybe that was your initial mock-up of something. And then you have to show the first date that you used it commercially. When was the first date that you sold a product or a service in interstate commerce that had that mark affixed to it? And those uses go to determine your superiority rights if there are other people coming with similar marks.
Okay, and so an example of like a brand name would be like Big Buds, right?
Right, and you know that's another thing is to receive trademark protection, your mark has to be distinctive. There are a number of different types of trademarks. You have fanciful marks, arbitrary marks, distinctive marks, descriptive marks. In the case of Big Buds, it could be that that mark is too descriptive of the product to obtain federal trademark rights. There were some issues talking about geographical descriptiveness back in the day with Nantucket Nectars. You might remember them as a juice company.
Yeah.
And they were initially refused trademark protection because their juice didn't actually come from Nantucket. So you have some things like that. So the Patent and Trademark Office will look to see if your mark is actually distinctive. Obviously, the marks that are the strongest have no relation at all to the product or services that's provided. For example, Verizon. It's a made-up word, and it has the strongest trademark rights you could possibly imagine for telecom services. Another example would be Apple. Apples have absolutely nothing to do with computers. And so it's got a very strong trademark right. A more descriptive trademark might be Greyhound for buses. It kind of gives you the mental impression that they're fast, they're sleek, they're on time, they're moving quickly. So if your mark is too descriptive, then the trademark office might deem it not descriptive enough to warrant trademark rights themselves.
Well, that is disappointing to hear about Nectars there, Nantucket Nectars. I love their Trivial Pursuit they have. I usually get it at Chipotle, and now I'm like, you guys are complete fakes. This is not even a real – it's not from Nantucket. There's all those trivia questions about Cape Cod and stuff, and now I'm just like, no, it's fake. It doesn't matter. Delicious, though. Peach.
Absolutely.
My favorite there.
Absolutely.
Okay, so moving on there. So how long does a trademark last?
On both the state and the federal level, protection can last indefinitely as long as you keep using the mark. At the federal level, there are certain maintenance milestones that you have to hit. Typically between the fifth and the sixth year of registration, you have to file an affidavit indicating that you're still using the mark in commerce, provide the Patent and Trademark Office with a specimen showing that you're still using it in commerce, and then you would have to do another maintenance between the ninth and tenth year of registration. And then if you continued to use the mark commercially, you would file a new renewal every 10 years thereafter. So you could have a trademark that lasted indefinitely, provided the company was still using it. On the state level, it varies from state to state. In Colorado, typically we have to renew any trademarks after 1 year.
All right, we need to take a short break. But when we come back, we'll be rejoined by Jay Kotzker, General Counsel of Strainwise Consulting. If you're in the break, check out their website, strainwiseconsulting.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about trade secrets, trademarks, the increase in cannabis IP, and what that means for you and your business. Stay tuned. We'll see you back in a minute.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
This is Bobby Black, host of Blazin', here to talk to you about 420 Science. I've known Matt and Gary from 420 Science for over a decade. We've spent a lot of time together at the Cannabis Cups in Amsterdam, the Doobie Awards in their hometown of Austin. They were even at my wedding. And I've always admired their integrity and how they've built 420 Science from the ground up to become the most trusted online head shop. Visit 420science.com/podcast for an exclusive deal on pipes and more from genuine people who put their customers first. That's 420science.com/podcast.
The smoke is rising, and the next crop of podcasts devoted to cannabis providers and enthusiasts are ready to be harvested.
Welcome to the Cannabis Radio Network,
founded by respected rainmakers who have been producing award-winning podcasts for over a decade. Industry headlines, business updates, medical reports, marketing, and e-commerce education rolled up perfectly for your consumption. Let's grow together. The Cannabis Radio Network. CannabisRadio.com.
Ignite the conversation on some trending topics along the Cannabis Radio social media network. Join our crew of thousands on our Cannabis Radio page on Facebook or at Canna Radio, C-A-N-N-A Radio on Twitter. Plus, look for our Facebook and Google Plus pages for all of our original programs and connect with Dr. Dina, Kyle Cushman, Dr. Mitch Earlywine, Nurse Heather, Doc Rob, the hosts of Gondrepreneur, and more. Connect with the growing Cannabis Radio social crusade at Canna Radio on Twitter or search for Cannabis Radio on Facebook, Google Plus, and Instagram and grow with us.
I hope you didn't forget about us because we're back with Blunt Business on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back to Blunt Business. I'm your host, Sean Eubanks. We've been talking to Jay Kotzker, General Counsel of Strainwise Consulting. Welcome back, Jay.
Thanks, Sean.
All right, so if I have a dispensary, am I able to trademark that? How can I protect it?
Well, on the state level, in states that allow trademarks for cannabis goods and services, you would be able to protect it. On the federal level, however, because it requires you to be using the mark commercially in interstate commerce, any sort of trademark relating to marijuana itself, dispensaries, places that sell or grow or process or manufacture in any way marijuana would not be permitted. They would not be granted trademark rights. And that's because on the federal level, any sort of trademark, any sort of cannabis use violates the Controlled Substances Act. Which is interestingly why you cannot get state-level trademark rights in California. Their trademark laws are set up to mirror federal law, and because cannabis is illegal on the federal level, they will not allow trademarks to be registered in California either. I suspect with the development and advancement of regulations in California, they may look to address that, but that'll be an interesting development down the road.
Okay, and forgive me for this dumb question, but how do I protect my name if it's just a dispensary, or what rights do I have there?
Right, there's a lot of different ways that you can do that. You can be creative. Obviously, there's a lot of things in a dispensary that are not cannabis or cannabis-infused. For example, you'll normally see hats and stickers and lighters and grinders and, you know, T-shirts and everything else that you would expect to find in a dispensary. All of that, because it does not contain cannabis, is not precluded from trademark rights under the Controlled Substances Act and the Federal Trademark Act. So you could get ancillary services and goods that you provide covered while not protecting the dispensary itself.
Okay, and so for example, in a Strainwise managed dispensary, we have our clothing articles, and retail space is a big part of every business. If you don't have that, you need that in your dispensary. But so we put the Strainwise logo on T-shirts, and at that point, it's protected, right?
Absolutely, not from the point that you put it on the T-shirt, but you know, we have been able to secure federal trademark rights for a host of ancillary goods, such as, like I said, lighters and glasses and sunglasses and hats and T-shirts and stickers and things like that.
Okay. And so why do I need to focus on intellectual property?
You know, this is a really, really expanding industry. And the advantage that a lot of us have is that the big brands, the big, Miracle-Gro and RJ Reynolds and all of those companies that we expect to move into this space aggressively in the coming years are not quite there yet because of the kind of federal uncertainty. So if you can develop an IP portfolio now for your cannabis business, you make your company that much more attractive later on when there is a lot of market consolidation.
Yeah, I mean, it's the number one asset that many companies hold. I mean, it seems like it's just so important because there's a lot of consolidation in the industry, and there are people that are selling and buying and doing different things. And if you haven't protected your IP, you're kind of SOL.
Yeah, absolutely. And you got to remember, like, think back to the early days of, you know, cannabis consumption prior to any sort of state regulation. I mean, people have been buying cannabis based on a variety or a brand for many years. Maybe that variety or brand was made up by the local dealer, but people definitely knew that there were brands and varieties of cannabis and cannabis strains that they wanted to purchase. So as the industry matures, IP is going to be probably the main driver, like it is in any other industry, to kind of separate your goods and your services and your products from your competitors.
One of the things I think you're doing a great job of is just kind of relaying and comparing other industries and other big companies and how it might go, because I love that. You're there in cannabis, we should be following pharmaceutical, food, agriculture, all the established industries, and kind of seeing how they develop. I love that you're tying all that back in.
Absolutely. And, you know, I have been guiding clients through intellectual property issues well before getting into the cannabis space. And, you know, whether it's in the cannabis space or outside of it, companies that adopt a strong intellectual property strategy at the early stages of their business will usually heap huge rewards in the future. We've seen that in Colorado, where the bigger brands and the more noticed brands are increasing their market share. I think there was articles just recently showing how the number of dispensaries being consolidated in a handful of large operators is just growing. So you're having branded stores and branding product on those shelves in those stores. And now it's being driven by intellectual property and brand awareness.
You know, and it makes sense. The people that are ahead on this and are getting this correct are the ones that are going to be acquired. They're going to get the big payday when they get purchased, because big pharma and big tobacco are not entering into the legal situation.
The status on the federal level, and you certainly don't blame them. They've got large business portfolios that they need to protect. But this is a perfect opportunity for, you know, smaller companies who are build their portfolio of patents, trademarks, copyrights, and in-house trade secrets that make their company such a valuable acquisition asset when these big companies do finally enter the industry.
You know, and I think when they do, Jay, they're going to be looking to consolidate. They're looking to purchase. They're not looking to start over from scratch. And they're going to be looking at the people that are ready to go and are already prepared and have taken the time to secure their IP.
Absolutely. I mean, if you think about it, a business will want to acquire another business that has market share, has a brand presence, has something that can easily translate to an end consumer, where a large acquisition is not going to be hampered because they recognize the brand and they don't care who necessarily owns that brand. They're going to be loyal to that brand.
And like almost every aspect in cannabis industry, there's some unique issues that the cannabis industry faces, but a lot of this is can be found in other industries.
Right. Absolutely. And there are some unique issues. I think we talked about that briefly with, the Patent and Trademark Office not accepting or not granting any trademark protection for cannabis products because they're illegality under federal law. So unlike trademarks that can't be granted any sort of trademark protection for cannabis products because of their illegality under federal law, patents, on the other hand, don't require a commercial use to be shown. So the federal government, while it looks like it might be talking out of both sides of its mouth saying, hey, we're not going to grant you trademark rights because you can't be doing something illegal in commerce, they will grant you patent rights because those patent rights are the right to exclude others from using it or making it or selling it. They're not necessarily granting you rights to make it or use it or sell it. So that the use in commerce provision is really the hitch there.
A mark that covers actual cannabis products like plants or edibles cannot be federally registered, even if it does not include the word cannabis, correct?
Right, correct. It doesn't really matter what's in the mark itself. Obviously, you're not going to want to put a marijuana leaf or a green cross or something like that in your trademark for a number of other reasons that we can talk about later. But even if the mark itself is for something that doesn't include any sort of identifier that it is a marijuana product, if the product itself contains marijuana or a derivative of marijuana such that it would violate the Controlled Substances Act, the trademark office will not approve it.
But a mark that references cannabis may be allowable if it's used on goods that are not themselves illegal under federal law, right?
That's right. For example, let's say that there was a grow light and it said, you know, Bud Maximizer or something, to give the impression that, hey, this light, you use it and you're gonna obtain amazing yields. Because that light itself doesn't contain marijuana, it's not a marijuana byproduct, it can be used for other things, you could certainly have, you know, secure federal trademark rights for the brand name of that grow light.
Okay, and so there's a lot of people in the industry getting smart, and there are companies that kind of, for simplicity's sake, for here on the radio, you're divided into a company that touches the plant and a company that does not touch the plant. The ones that, can we simplify that? Is that okay?
Sure.
So the ones that are not touching the plant, they can, oddly enough, have the word cannabis and specific bud or, you know, Bud Maximizer and all these things. So that's a huge advantage that they have.
Well, it certainly is. Obviously, when you're providing ancillary goods and services, those goods and services can be provided to a number of other industries, not specific cannabis industries. For example, StrainWise itself, even though it provides services to the regulated cannabis market, it's able to secure federal trademark rights for its consulting services and its branding services because they can be provided to other businesses and the company itself does not touch the plant.
Now, you mentioned earlier that California will not allow a state registration to cover cannabis products that are illegal under federal law, but most states with legalized cannabis do allow state trademarks for cannabis products like, obviously, Washington, Oregon, Colorado, or Pennsylvania.
That's right. And as we touched on briefly, I think that it'll be interesting to see how California's trademark law develops over the course of the next year or two as state regulations come online. Like as I mentioned, the California law says that their trademark law must be consistent with federal law. And because federal law said that any sort of use in commerce of cannabis violates the Controlled Substances Act and won't allow federal trademarks, California is adopting that same policy currently.
And the USPTO has held that it will grant patents for cannabis-related inventions. Talk about the legal purpose restriction and what does that mean?
Right. The legal purpose does not apply under the patent laws. For example, as we talked about under trademarks, you have to be using the product or selling the product in interstate commerce legally because of the Controlled Substances Act. Doing that with any sort of marijuana or marijuana-infused product, it violates that legal purpose. And as we mentioned earlier, because patents don't require you to be selling it or making it or using it, they really just grant you the right to exclude others from doing that. The Patent and Trademark Office has been granting cannabis patents.
Do you recommend that your colleagues who are specialized in IP, that they go after trying to patent these plant varieties?
Well, ultimately, it's not the attorneys who would be really driving this, but the industry itself. If you've got some boutique cultivators or you've got some really in-depth R&D departments who are developing new and useful and non-obvious strains that can be used to address specific issues, then yes, I think what you're going to see is the IP revolution in the cannabis space is really going to take off.
Okay, and so these patents are obviously enforced by suing an infringer in federal court, but is that can they decline to enforce that, and would that make sense for them to do it?
Right, and that's kind of the sticking point with respect to cannabis patents. So you do have a legal right to enforce your patents, but because you would likely be suing someone in federal court, which a patent gives you access to, you may find a federal court decline to hear a case or dismiss a case because of the illegal nature of the product at issue. We haven't specifically seen that yet, but a federal court may decline to enforce a cannabis patent right now. We just don't know.
Okay, and can you speak to the timing of patents, how long they last, and you know, the time frame? Because we think cannabis will be legal within the next 20 years, but you've got 20 years for a patent.
That's right. Like we talked about, the patents last 20 years. So there's a very high likelihood that cannabis becomes federally legal before a patent would expire, at which time, you know, maybe you have a greater likelihood of success enforcing them in federal court. So the opportunity to start securing these patent rights to build your IP portfolio is now, understanding that the rights that you hold, especially in the patent space, will extend likely into the years where it's legal on the federal level.
And so if I hear you correctly, you're not going to be able, if you wait, you're not going to be able to seek patent protection after it's already legal.
Right. And you would be able to for new strains or new plant varieties that are created once it becomes federally legal. But anything that you're developing now won't be protectable likely because of that 1 year time bar. So like I said before, you have to file your patent application within 1 year of selling or publicly disclosing your invention. So if you have a product that you've developed now, and you want to wait to secure patent rights until it becomes federally legal, that 1 year bar will likely prevent you from doing so.
Okay. And then we talked a little bit about patents for growing methods. Is there anything else you want to add to that?
Yeah, there have been a number of patents that have been issued for growing methods themselves. There's one that was just recently issued in August of 2015, and it's called a sustainable aquaponic system and method for growing plants like medical cannabis. And it's really all about the method for growing in an aquaponic system. And this method is new and novel and non-obvious for a number of different reasons, but the method itself is protectable.
So the sustainable aquaponic system, that's when you have live fish in there and they're using the excrement to basically fertilize the plants?
Right. The claim itself reads, it's a sustainable aquaponic system comprising of a man-made pond connected by a pump of a plurality of man-made raceways, each raceway lined with tarp and containing a variety of plant species, including blue algae to remove waste materials. And it goes on and on and on. And it's very technical. Patent claims like this are drafted by very well-educated, very intelligent patent attorneys who know how to make their patent claims as broad as possible. So in this case, we're talking about the system itself. It goes into how the plants are arranged in these tarps, how fish or other algae and other items in the water itself will remove contaminants, will fertilize the plants, and it was able to secure protection.
I would love to see that aquaponics on a commercial level. I think it's one thing if you're growing 10 or 12 plants at a time, but if you're growing 10 or 12,000, you're going to have some issues there. Okay, so talk about the increase in the spike in patent applications under cannabis and what that looks like.
Right. So, you know, tracking back, 15, 20 years, what we've seen is the number of published patent applications with cannabis in the title or the abstract, which is a brief description of what the patent contains, have skyrocketed. What you've seen basically since 2013 is that published patent applications have increased from around 25 all the way up to close to 90 towards the end of 2016. So it's an industry that's growing, and it's become increasingly aware of the rights that it can secure, and people are aggressively moving in that direction.
Okay, we're almost out of time here. Just tell me a little bit about how you can use IP to your advantage and what people listening need to do next.
Right. On the cultivation side, growers and breeders, they should try to implement a comprehensive IP strategy that encompasses a lot of different IP avenues, whether it's trade secrets, whether it's plant patents, whether it's trademarks or copyrights, to protect their innovations right now.
Okay, and what are the typical costs associated with plant patents?
It typically costs around $2,000, ranging up to about $6,000. And as we said before, it takes about 2 years to get the patent allowed. During the pendency of that patent application, however, you do have some priority rights against other people later coming into the industry. You've seen on a number of goods and things, it says patent pending, and then it'll list the patent application number.
Okay, and I think people listening here are thinking, wow, this guy Jay's smart. How do I get in touch with him? Are there services he's available? Unfortunately, you're one of the busiest guys that I know. It's amazing that, and I'm truly grateful that you're able to sit here for an hour with us and talk. But what would you recommend that they do? Just contact Stringwise Consulting as a consultant, and then they get you as a part of those services, or would you be available just to help with IP?
Right, because I'm not working as an attorney for a specific client, I wouldn't be able to provide specific legal advice. However, we could talk in generalities about the best methods for developing an IP protection strategy. We could make referrals with IP specific attorneys in the states in which these clients operate, and we could generally guide them through the process and at least get them thinking about how IP really interplays into their business model, how it provides extreme value to their business, and how they can go about starting to protect that.
Okay, and I can't let you off the hook. I got to ask you a couple of personal questions here to get to know you. What brought you to this industry, and what's your why for doing this?
You know, I really started servicing a couple of clients that were in the industry back when it was a medical-only industry. I found that those clients were very forward-thinking in how they were developing a brand around something that was so new and so taboo at the time. They had really spent a good amount of energy and resources and time into developing an IP strategy, which was so forward-thinking at the time that it really drew me to help to protect their brands and to help them move that brand protection onto a new level.
Okay, and last question for you. Besides federal legalization, what is your greatest hope for the industry?
I would hope that state trademark rights come in line with each other so that businesses who are offering products and services in various different states are able to secure equal trademark rights in those states. For example, if you were able to obtain a trademark right in Colorado for a brand of dispensary, I would hope that you'd be able to somehow protect your business in California from poachers.
Well, I want to thank you all for joining us on this edition of Blunt Business. Our guest was Jay Kotzer, General Counsel of Stringwise Consulting. It has been an enlightening conversation. I appreciate you coming on, my friend.
My pleasure, Sean. Thank you.
You can download episodes of our program by going to CannabisRadio.com, BluntBusinessRadio.com, or subscribing to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, and now iHeartRadio. Until next time, friends, have a great day.
The opinions expressed on this CannabisRadio.com program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of CannabisRadio.com. Any rebroadcast or redistribution without proper consent of CannabisRadio.com is prohibited.
Hear that? Is that America cheering or a sausage patty sizzling to perfection? It's time to cheer for Egg McMuffin and fresh cracked eggs at McDonald's. It's time to wake up to the aroma of freshly baked biscuits and treat yourself to a real honest-to-goodness morning meal. Breakfast, it's on at McDonald's. Now enjoy a large iced coffee for just $2. Add a breakfast sandwich to make a meal. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Help Jews in Poverty at helpjewsnow.org. Your $25 gift today will help provide a life-saving food box to Jews in need. Be a blessing right now. Visit helpjewsnow.org. That's helpjewsnow.org.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good.
Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.